From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. If you drop a pound or two or 20, you'll probably be asked, are you on Ozempic? It seems like everyone is on the GLP-1 weight loss drugs these days, but not everyone is taking the brand name versions. Compounded knockoffs that are much less expensive and easier to get are increasingly popular.
A splashy ad during Sunday's Super Bowl pitched easy, affordable access to compounded drugs from Hims & Hers, a telehealth startup. But absent from the ad was the long laundry list of potential side effects or any statement that these copycat drugs aren't FDA approved. And that worried a lot of physicians.
Have we crossed a line in the mass marketing of medications? Our big question today, should weight loss medications be for everyone? Call 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. That's coming up.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Trump is hosting Jordan's King Abdullah II at the White House today, their meeting taking place against the backdrop of a fragile ceasefire and hostages for prisoners agreement between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. Yesterday, Trump proposed a ceasefire be canceled if Hamas does not release all remaining hostages taken since the start of the war. Trump has also promoted Israel hand control of Gaza to the United States and relocate the Palestinian people to other parts of the Middle East, an idea strongly opposed by Arab governments across the region. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell says the central bank's not in a hurry to continue cutting interest rates.
We know that reducing policy restraint too fast or too much could hinder progress on inflation.
Testifying before the Senate Banking Committee today, Powell says inflation is still somewhat elevated over the Fed's 2% goal, but has eased significantly over the past 2 years. U.S. embassies are struggling to oversee humanitarian aid the Trump administration is allowing to go through. That's according to the Inspector General of the embattled U.S. Agency for International Development. Here's NPR's Michelle Kellerman.
When the Trump administration came to office, it put most foreign aid on hold, but Secretary of State Marco Rubio has allowed for emergency humanitarian relief to continue. The trouble is, USAID staff around the world have been getting mixed signals, losing access to their emails and being put on administrative leave before a judge temporarily halted that. Now USAID's Inspector General is reporting that the agency has limited ability to oversee what aid is going through. There's food aid at risk of spoilage, according to the report, and a concern that there's not enough staff to vet partners in the Middle East to make sure U.S. taxpayer money is not benefiting terrorist groups. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
The first of three predicted storms packing a little bit of everything winter has to offer is on the move. NPR's Giles Snyder with details.
The first storm is moving east out of Kansas, where Governor Laura Kelly has declared a state of emergency. The storm will bring significant snow and ice accumulations to the mid-Atlantic. Winter storm warnings extend from Kentucky to southern New Jersey. And Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin has also declared an emergency amid warnings of treacherous travel conditions and potential power outages. On the heels of the first storm, another round of heavy snow from a second storm is expected from Kansas and Missouri into the Great Lakes and will be on the East Coast by Thursday morning. A third significant storm is expected to bring the threat of flooding to California, especially to areas devastated by last month's wildfires around Los Angeles. Giles Snyder, NPR News.
The Dow is up 45 points. The Nasdaq is down 94. You're listening to NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One, offering their premium travel card, Venture X. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
And welcome on into Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. You know, Avi, I celebrated the Super Bowl over the weekend.
I did too. Can you tell?
Yeah, you were screaming. I know you were. Even cut your beard, by the way.
Don't need it anymore.
Yeah. Because the Eagles won. I made this whole spread. And I mean, we were eating.
Congrats.
Yeah. And, you know, during the Super Bowl, there's commercials. And there was one that stood out. Had somebody with the belly out. It was for from a company called Hims and Hers.
Yeah.
And it was pretty flashy, talking about making, you know, weight loss more accessible.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I mean, and it's supposed to be cheaper, right?
Yeah.
You could get access to all kinds of like drugs that could help you lose weight fast. They would be cheaper than if you went to your doctor's office. It was pretty splashy and has made a big impact. And people have already written think pieces about the Hims and Hers ads. And so we decided to do what we do here at Studio 2 and peel back the layers. We're going to talk about the pitch that Hims and Hers made. We're going to talk about the drugs underneath it all, these compounded prescription drugs, which are versions of the GLP-1s like Wegovy and Ozempic,
right,
that are much cheaper and more accessible. You can get them online without ever stepping into a doctor's office. You can go to a med spa and get them.
Ooh,
and they're
a
like
med spa.
A med spa. I've gone to a med spa.
Yeah, nice.
And so we're going to talk about this. We have an
expert.
It's
good marketing to call it a med spa.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. You can get like little facials and all kinds of stuff.
Nice.
There. So we have an expert that's going to come in and we're going to talk about some of the warnings. A lot of this stuff isn't necessarily regulated by the FDA. We're going to talk about the risk factors there, some of the drugs you can access through them. And our big question for you, our listeners today, is should these weight loss drugs be made accessible to all? Should weight loss drugs be for everyone? If you want them, should you just be able to get them, right? You can call us 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube and you're watching, hi, how are you, Studio Tubers? Please drop your comment or your question in the chat. And I mean, like, Avi, I have literally been trying to lose the same 15 pounds since the pandemic started. So I want to hear what they have to say today.
You're intrigued.
I'm intrigued.
I'm also intrigued by our trio of local news stories. And we'll start with the story that caused my voice to be in the state that it's in. The Eagles obviously won the Super Bowl on Sunday. We're
Go
all
Bears.
Very excited about it. And just this morning, we got the details on the championship parade. We already knew it was going to be Friday. It's going to take the route that many expected it would. It will start down in South Philly near the stadium complex. It will go up Broad Street, hang a left on the parkway, and end at the Art Museum. Starts at 11 o'clock. It will get to the Art Museum around 12:30, and then the ceremonies, the speeches and whatnot, that begins at 2 p.m. We have a live blog up at whyy.org right now with even more details. For instance, subway lines are going to be free for the day.
Oh, that's a nice perk.
That is courtesy of Kevin Hart's tequila brand. Apparently, they're covering the cost of that.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
All those little details you can get at whyy.org. And, of course, a lot of you remember 2018. It's going to be a pretty similar layout to that.
Yeah. Do you remember 2018? Like were you out there?
I was covering it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was too. I was on the parkway.
No Kevin Hart tequila for me. I was sober and I had a microphone.
Yeah. I was on the parkway. It was a lot of people. So if you're going to be out there, make sure you plan ahead.
Yeah.
And sort of map out, you know, how to get there and how you plan to get back home.
Yeah.
But it was so beautiful.
But also be patient.
Yeah.
Because it'll go wrong.
Yeah, and it was cold, but it was so warm at the same time. By the way, that's Valentine's Day, so it'll be a green Valentine's Day for all of us.
Showing our love for the Eagles on Valentine's Day. Yeah, and I think, you know, if you go down to South Philly, the crowds are a little thinner. If you're out at the Art Museum, it's a big
thick
throng. So,
yeah.
it's whatever type of experience you want. Last time, it was right around the freezing mark that day. It's going to be pretty similar, maybe a little warmer this time.
Yeah, and it's going to be sunny. I mean, we're supposed to have some snow over the next couple of days, but hopefully all of this, you know, cold, cold wintry weather will clear out and we'll have a really nice winter day on Friday.
Sky of blue above, sea of green below.
I love it. I love it. I know you can't wait. So, second story. On Monday, a federal judge blocked the Trump administration's cuts to health and science research funding. This temporary block came in response to a lawsuit that was filed by a coalition of Democratic state attorneys generals, including the attorney generals from New Jersey and Delaware. They've argued that these new Trump limits on federal medical research would have a devastating effect on studies into treatments for cancer, HIV, Alzheimer's, and they claim that the cuts would grind the research to a halt. And with a lack of warning, they argue that the cuts are unlawful and will cause significant harm. Now, the Trump administration is seeking to cut about $4 billion in overhead costs. And this lawsuit basically challenges this Trump 15% cap on costs for like utilities, administrative expenses, and other things from universities. And there is a local impact because the University of Pennsylvania would lose about $250 million in funding.
Wow.
And they get about $980 million a year in federal funds, by far the largest share of federal medical research funding. And so this federal judge in Boston has issued a temporary pause on the funding changes. They've scheduled a court date later this month. And the judge has required all 22 states involved to provide a status report by today and then every 2 weeks to make sure that the Trump administration does not stop the flow of the money.
But the judge's order omits the states that were not part of the lawsuit.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania was not part of the lawsuit.
No.
Like, pretty easy to connect some dots here. Pennsylvania mm-hmm. has a new Republican attorney general. Mm-hmm. So they did not join New Jersey and Delaware in this. So
that $250 million.
Yep. So for Penn, for Rutgers, right? I guess you're
it
okay
stopped.
For now.
Yep.
If you're Penn, I think you're still in limbo. Third story now. Mm-hmm. And this was a great one from The Enquirer. Amy Rosenberg had a profile. She covers the Shore for The Enquirer, and she's so good at finding these stories. She did a profile of the last remaining toll taker in Cape May County. So if you go down the Shore, like in Cape May County and some other places, there are some toll booths left. It's not just Easy Pass.
Mm.
And Cape May County is going to finally transition to all Easy Pass on April 1st.
Wow.
But she profiled this guy, Rick Shetler, mm-hmm. Who has been collecting cash at the Townsend's Inlet Bridge for over 40 years. And
that's a long time.
It's a long time to be in a toll booth,
yeah.
right? And he had some good stories from being in the booth. He calls it his home away from home. This is the bridge that connects Avalon to Sea Isle City. And so, you know, most of the people already use Easy Pass, but it's going to go all Easy Pass soon. And so it was just a delightful little story about, you know, that's the thing with technological progress. Sometimes you kind of forget what's being replaced because it happens slowly over time.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, like toll collectors. That's you're going to talk about toll collectors, you know, to someone 50 years from now. And they're going to be like, what is that? What
I
was
know.
That person? What the heck were they doing?
The little betas won't know what a
the
toll
little betas, the
was.
Little
but what I will say, this is truly an end of an era. And I was one of those holdout people who refused to get an Easy Pass.
Really?
Right. But then they started doing the toll by plate and the administrative fees.
Wait, why
were
you
like
a holdout? You like waiting in
I
line?
Just didn't want to do it. I didn't want people tracking me.
Okay.
Don't even tell me. Don't say Cherry when they're already tracking you by
got
your
it.
Plate.
Got
I get it.
It. Got it.
So I have my issues. And then finally, because of the administrative fees, you relented.
Yeah.
And I mean, I do save a ton of time with the Easy Pass, but I did kind of like rolling through and saying what's
Say
up to the toll collectors. I did.
It's a sad surrender to Big Brother there on the Easy Pass. I was reading this story and I was like thinking in my mind, this is like the perfect Bruce Springsteen song, you know?
Aww.
Like the last toll collector. You know,
yeah.
I could totally see a Bruce. It's in New Jersey, you know, last toll collector on the county line.
I know.
Looking for a guide in a highway sign.
Look at
I mean,
you.
I could do
and
the whole song.
And the raspy is hooking
it's
you
helping
up.
Me
it's
today.
Giving you a good voice. By the way, one of the little tidbits in the
headlights
story.
Headlights flashing in the Jersey night. You're
going to lean all the way into
last this. Last toll connector on the county line. Call me Bruce.
You are loving.
I could be his lyricist.
He is loving the raspy voice. By the way, I wanted to just say
what?
This.
I got a thumbs down from producer Paige.
I loved
it. That was a
it.
Great song.
I loved it.
I'm going to record that. Last Toll Collector.
By the way,
a new hit.
I love
from
the
Raspy
fact,
Avi.
I love the fact that they used to have these pay it forward chains through the tolls where someone would pay the
yeah.
toll for the person behind them and they wouldn't break the chain.
Bruce could do a song about that too, because he's all about people helping people, but also how technological.
Did that go,
Avi? What? Wait. What was the topic?
It's a pay it forward chains on the.
We're paying for each other, rising up. Oh yeah,
Bruce is gonna call you. Bruce is gonna call you, and you want him to call you. So Coming up, we'll be talking about GLP-1 drugs and accessibility after the break. Stick with us. Lots to come.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. GLP-1 weight loss drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy are everywhere, and the demand continues to grow for people who need to shed a lot of weight or even just a little. But not everyone can get a physician to prescribe the brand name medications, and that is where compounding pharmacies and telehealth companies are stepping in, like Hims & Hers, which ran a very controversial ad during the Super Bowl on Sunday.
Obesity is America's deadliest epidemic.
This is America.
74% of us are overweight, and obesity leads to 500,000 deaths each year.
Why, you just have to stop eating, Jimmy.
This is America.
Something's broken, and it's not our bodies. It's the system. Welcome to Weight Loss in America.
Like and subscribe.
A $160 billion industry that feeds on our failure.
Yeah.
There are medications that work, but they're priced for profits, not patients.
This is America.
This system wasn't built to help us. It was built to keep us sick and stuck.
Definitely one of the more memorable ads from Super Bowl Sunday. And the ad goes on from there. It's promoting more affordable and accessible compounded versions of the expensive drugs. But the commercial failed to mention any potential side effects or the fact that these compounded medications are not FDA approved. Dr. Zeke Emanuel is joining us now to talk about these telemedicine companies like Hims & Hers, the future of the weight loss industry, and the safety and availability of these drugs. He's the Vice Provost of Global Initiatives at the University of Pennsylvania and co-directs the university's Health Transformation Institute. He was also one of the architects of Obamacare. Dr. Zeke Emanuel, welcome to Studio 2.
Great to be with you again.
Great to have you.
Yeah, great to have you back. And our question for you today, should weight loss drugs be for everyone? Susan says, yes, of course, as long as a person is an adult. Children would need parental and doctor approval. That's Susan's take. You want to add yours? Email studio2@whyy.org. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. And if you are watching on WHYY's YouTube channel, drop your comments right there in the live chat.
And so, Dr. Zeke Emanuel, I want to start with this. I mean, you heard that ad from Hims & Hers. Can you try to explain to us how these telemedicine and online pharmacies typically work such that folks who wouldn't necessarily maybe be able to get a prescription can somehow get access to these GLP-1s?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that what they're appealing to are people who couldn't necessarily get access so much as people who might not be able to afford the drug through the usual pharmaceutical channels. I think it was the price. You know, they had that line about putting profits over patients in there. I think it's really about the price. Their price is significantly cheaper than the prescription drugs. And let's make no mistake about it. The price for the prescription drugs are a serious problem, even when you take in discounts and rebates and that bring the price. They come in a little under $1,000 a month. And I think Hims & Hers is something like $150 mm-hmm. a month. I don't know the exact amount that they're selling it at. So that's, I think, the major issue. And then there is, of course, the issue of who gets it, especially given the fact that we have some shortages of some of these drugs. Wegovy and Ozempic, I believe, both are still in shortage, whereas the Lilly drug, Mounjaro, the FDA in December declared that it's no longer in shortage, partially to prevent the compounders from selling it.
So how does it typically work when you
You call up, you get a brief medical consult with a doctor, and then you get a prescription. That's the usual method that goes on. And, it, you know, it, it, let's be clear, the doctors aren't there to make sure that everything is you're the right person, you should get priority. The doctors are there to sell you the meds.
So they have an incentive to say yes.
Well, I don't know how they're paid, but yes, the barriers are not there. There's no real follow-up with the patients. They're not a personal primary care physician or a endocrinologist dealing with your diabetes and things like that. It's not the way medicine should be practiced. Let us just say that. Yeah.
Why is it so much cheaper?
Because it's, you know, the big drug companies have invested in the clinical trials. Hims and Hers has invested not a nickel in the clinical trials. And the big drug companies are making a substantial profit. But let's be clear, the compounding pharmacies are making a substantial profit too. The estimate is that these drugs cost about $5 to produce. Maybe they're a little more for the compounding pharmacies because they don't have economies of scale. So call it $10. You're selling it for $150, even with packaging and some marketing. That's a big profit margin.
And so what's the big difference from the prescription drug that you would get with the brand name and the compounded version of that same drug?
FDA inspection, FDA approval, and the reassurance that this has been done according to good manufacturing and production processes. That is your main difference between the compounding pharmacies and the prescription drugs. Unless people say, well, you know, what difference? It's the same molecule. It is in fact the same molecule. Let's give them that they're actually manufacturing the same molecule. But how the quality of the manufacturing process is a very important issue. And let's remind the audience that back in 2012, we had a major scandal around compounding pharmacies that were selling a steroid. The New England Compounding Center sold a steroid. The steroid was fine, but the manufacturing was defective and the packaging, and it was infected with a fungus. Patients took it, something like 800, just a little less than 800 patients were infected with the fungus, and 64, 65, something like that, died as a result of the fungal infection. So the idea that, you know, you just want to say, well, what's the difference if the FDA didn't inspect? It's, you know, still the same molecule. That can be true, but we have seen many, many cases where production of drugs, in the case of compounding, but also supplements, which are basically also not overseen by the FDA, have contaminants that are, in many cases, life-threatening. And that's really the major problem. You know, I should say a lot. I think if we had a different mechanism and a different pricing structure, we would put the Hims and Hers sales and other
out of business.
Compounders out of business.
Yeah.
And from my standpoint, that would, in this case, probably be a good thing.
Yeah. So let me read this comment from Rachel, who is echoing much of what you said, Zeke. It's very difficult to get the FDA-approved prescriptions covered by insurance, and without that, they're about $1,000 a month. Folks are doing this compounding thing because it's much more accessible and not nearly as safe or predictable. So you talked about the screening process for getting access via a telemedicine provider like Hims and Hers, and you sounded very skeptical of the screening process. Now, Hims and Hers sells much more than just compounded versions of GLP-1s. There's medication for mental health. There's hair loss medication. There's medication for sexual performance. Do you think there are some categories of medication that are safe enough that it's okay to kind of go through the easy pass version of the medical system, go online, get it, bing, bang, boom, and take it? Or do you think all medication should go through that traditional route?
I'm a big fan of the traditional route. Is it foolproof? Do we not have some problems with it? Yes, we do. And we know we've seen some of those problems where even with the FDA approval, et cetera, we've had problems with the manufacturing and it not being up to standards. And then the FDA closes things down and requires cleaning of the facilities. It requires a redo of the manufacturing process. And that's good. I have seen a few of the Hims and Hers ads. I don't watch a lot of TV, and I see them occasionally on streaming when I do watch. And I have to say, I find it really kind of appalling. I'm not going to be on their mailing list, you can be sure, and they're really pissed at me. But I find it appalling that we have a country that that's really acceptable. There are some drugs with very low side effects. You know, there are some people in the medical profession occasionally joke, well, we should put statins in the water. Statins are drugs for reducing cholesterol. Right. They're safe, but they're not 100% safe. And, you know, I'm actually one of those.
So, but what's the downside? What's the downside of, like, let's say you've got male pattern baldness and you go and you get the pill version of Rogaine through this telemedicine method where you basically don't really interface with the doctor. And you, of course, you can lie on the intake form as well. What's the actual downside of that?
Risks. I mean, the risks of adverse events, of different problems that arise. And, you know, then you go to a doctor. Doctor doesn't know what formulation you use.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily know the compounder. Their reputation. That's the problem. You know, I like to say nothing in healthcare is risk-free. There are minimal risks to everything. And I was saying, you know, statin is one of those drugs that a lot of doctors think, well, the risks are so low. But talk to people who've been on statins, and I'm one of them. And I had to stop because I had this, statins can affect your muscles. It's called rhabdomyolysis. They can break down your muscles and cause some serious kidney and other problems, and I had to stop taking them. Yeah. And that is one of those problems that could arise.
And you're saying it's better for your GP to know what you're taking so that when those problems arise, they're better able to counteract them.
Well, two things. When those problems arise, and the other thing I was going to get to, Avi, and I think you were pushing in that direction, which is, look, a lot of people are on more than one medication. They're not just on a single drug. And we have lots of hospital admissions because of drug-drug interaction, especially as people get older and they have multiple drugs for multiple conditions. And these are also, you know, not necessarily well screened for when your basic business model is we're going to sell you a drug and, you know, that's what we're making our money on. You know, again, having a doctor who's not making money on selling the drug and is interested in your health is, I think, a lot safer. The motivation is it going to be good for you? Here's the drug-drug interactions. Are doctors perfect at that? No. And that's, I think, one of the problems of our system. Are they better than you're just calling up someone you never see and you've never seen and you're never going to see again who doesn't have your full medical history?
Yeah. And I want to invite you, our listener, to participate in the conversation. Do you think weight loss drugs should be available or made available to everyone? You can give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. If you think that maybe weight loss drugs or other types of drugs should be made more accessible, give us a call or an email. And if you're on YouTube, be sure to drop your comment or question in the chat. And so I wanted to bring in, we have another caller on the line, and because we had a lot of questions about how compounding works and the safety and how do you know what's in a medication. So we reached out to Scott Bruner, the CEO of the Alliance for Compounding Pharmacies, the trade association, and Scott's on the phone. Scott, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you.
So, Scott, I mean, you probably heard some of the commentary here. And so compounded medications are only allowed when a drug is on the FDA shortage list. Can you explain how this works and whether it's being used as intended?
Yeah. So first of all, I would echo Dr. Emanuel's statement. FDA-approved drugs in our healthcare system are supreme. If an FDA-approved drug is judged by a prescriber to be right for a patient and the FDA-approved drug is available, it's accessible, it's not in shortage, then the FDA-approved drug is what should be dispensed. Compounding, and compounding is basically making a customized medication for an individual patient using bulk ingredients. Compounding is authorized in the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act and in the pharmacy laws of every state for really two circumstances. One is when an FDA-approved drug the prescriber wants for his or her patient is in shortage. In that instance, compounding pharmacies within guidelines of the U.S. Pharmacopeia, FDA, et cetera, can prepare a copy of that FDA-approved drug. The other instance when compounding is authorized is when a prescriber looks at, has a patient with a certain condition, looks out and determines that there's not a commercially available drug, not an FDA-approved drug in the dosage form or dosage strength or combination that he or she judges is best for that patient. And in that instance, the prescriber can write for a compounded medication. And again, we're talking about prescription drugs that are prepared in particularly with GLP-1 drugs, we're talking about injectables. So sterile injectables prepared in certified labs, inspected by state boards of pharmacy, sometimes by FDA, often by the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy and other accredited accrediting agencies, and they adhere to the compounding chapters of the U.S. Pharmacopeia. And it is a rigorous standard. I want to make clear, compounded drugs are not FDA approved. And so is there a higher level of risk with a compounded drug? Absolutely. Is a compounded drug inherently risky because it's not FDA approved? No, you can't. That's just an illogical leap. So I would say if a patient is getting a prescription for a compounded drug, GLP-1 or otherwise, from a state licensed pharmacy, they can have some assurance that the drug is going to do for them what it purports to do. I know Dr. Emanuel mentioned the New England Compounding Center tragedy, and that's a huge black eye on compounding. But we live in a different world from 2012. In 2013, the Drug Quality and Security Act was passed and created an entirely new framework for pharmacy compounding. And so I would assert that it's a rigorous framework.
Right. Let me ask you this, Scott, because it does sound like we're describing two pretty different things here. On the one hand, you have maybe a single patient needs a specific formulation because, I don't know, maybe they need an oral medication because they can't take the drug a certain way. That seems very targeted. It's almost sort of a boutique. And then we have what's going on with Hims and Hers, which is let's get this out to a lot of people really quickly because there's a short supply. That does strike me as a potentially riskier proposition because you are using the sort of the compounding approach, but in a mass market way. How would you ease my concerns about that?
Yeah, well, I would tell you that we are in uncharted territory. This era of GLP-1 drugs for the past 3 years has been extraordinary. You have a blockbuster drug that is a new drug that is in shortage, and you've got millions of Americans who want some of it, who are going to their prescriber, and prescribers are judging that they need the medication. And so, in accordance with the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, pharmacies are making copies of that injectable. It is unusual, the scale of what we're seeing, what we continue to see, particularly with semaglutide. The Novo Nordisk product has been in shortage, will be 3 years next month. And there are prescribers who are judging that their patients would benefit from that, yeah. And so they're authorizing.
But I guess
the,
my question for you, Scott, sorry to cut you off, is that is the compounding pharmacy industry really set up to do this, or have we exposed ourselves to more risk because they're doing something that it's really not their wheelhouse?
Well, let's talk about Hims and Hers, and I do not want to seem to be a spokesperson for Hims and Hers.
Sure.
We do not represent telehealth platforms. We represent pharmacies and outsourcing facilities. I do know, though, that the Hims and Hers product that is being dispensed is being prepared by a 503B outsourcing facility, so not your traditional compounding pharmacy. 503Bs were created with the Drug Quality and Security Act, and they have to adhere to a much, much higher standard, current good manufacturing practices similar to those followed by the drug makers. And so the thing I would say about what Hims is doing is that the drugs they are dispensing are prepared to a higher standard. I don't know that you could say automatically that they're safer, but the testing regime that they go through, the rigor of that is a higher standard. So, you know, I do believe that Hims and others are taking advantage of this extraordinary demand at a time when the drug makers are unable thus far to meet that demand.
Yeah. Thank you so much. That was Scott Bruner, CEO of the Alliance for Pharmacy Compounding. Scott, thank you for your time and for being on Studio 2.
Thank you.
All right. And so Scott talked about the demand, and so we want to bring a caller in. We have Tiffany from Philadelphia, who has used some of these compounded GLP-1 drugs. Tiffany, you're on Studio 2. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
And so, Tiffany, tell us a little bit about your experience in getting access to GLP-1s.
Yeah. So like everyone else was hearing a lot about the options for weight loss beyond, you know, just exercising and eating right. But, you know, some of those pounds that can't come off when you want them to. So I go to a medical spa here in Philadelphia that I've been going to for 20 years. And they started offering semaglutide and really just walking me through the process. They had like a sort of a discount because I was getting ready for the summer of last year, so it wasn't as expensive as I was seeing at other places. And they walked me through the process of, you know, weighing, you know, having the weight process done, understanding your body composition, how much fat you're trying to lose. So they had a full weight loss program. It wasn't like, hey, just take this medication. It focused on nutrition. It focused on speaking to a fitness expert. And so I signed up to try it for 4 weeks. And it was a good experience because they also did blood work beforehand to make sure I was eligible for it. So it's not something they just give it to you, right? Anyone that you're selecting, you want to make sure that they're testing it out to make sure that it's okay for your body. So we did that full blood work. We did a full makeup of, you know, body mass and fat mass and all of that.
And did it
so
work?
It was a full process. Yeah, so it worked. Yeah, so I did 4 weeks. I lost about 2 pounds a week, about 8 pounds over that 4 week period. That was my goal. My goal was just like kick off my weight loss journey in addition to like working out and eating right, and just needed to like stop munching and eating a bunch of stuff over that period to get ready for the summer and travel. So yeah, it actually worked for me.
Interesting.
Yeah. And did you have any concerns about the medication? We've been talking about compounded drugs. Did you have any concerns when you took the drugs from this med spa?
I did. I mean, just with anything, like anything you're injecting in your body, you're always concerned. But I also knew going through the blood work and going through all of the pre stuff that they had me do helped to alleviate some of that concern. Because again, if you're going a place and they're not giving you blood work and making sure that you're healthy to take it, you're choosing the wrong place, right? So whether you're doing online or doing something in person. And then I was also really nervous about the needles. I'm like, I am not a needle person. That is the last thing I want to do. Mm-hmm. But it was probably the smallest needle I've ever had in my life. And I was like when I would take it, I was like, oh, did I press the needle? Did it go in? And I'm like, oh, I'm done. Like, it was the craziest thing. So I don't know if all the needles are that way, but it was actually a really simple process. Because at first I'm like, they did the first dosage and then the other three they give for you to do at home. And then I learned how to do it. I was like, oh, this is actually a pretty good process. I wouldn't do it like forever,
right,
but it's definitely something that I would do at the beginning or end of my kind of weight loss journey.
Simple and effective, according to Tiffany in Philadelphia. Tiffany, thanks so much for your time today on Studio 2.
Thank you for having me.
So that's actually a nice way, I think, to get us to our next segment, because we're about to hit a break. And I think the big question we're kind of dancing around here, mm-hmm, Cherry, is who should be taking these weight loss medications?
It's a big one.
If you're trying to lose just a few pounds at the beginning or the end of a journey like Tiffany, should GLP-1s be for you? Or are there too many unknown risks about sort of the lifetime effects of these drugs to be prescribing them in that way? So we still have Dr. Zeke Emanuel on the line. We'll get that question and many more to him on the other side of this break on Studio 2. Keep those calls and comments coming. Studio 2 at WHYY.org. Comments in the live stream on YouTube or call 888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. And we are talking about how GLP-1 medications are changing our health and healthcare. We're looking at how more people are turning to cheaper and more easily available compounded generic versions of drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy. Dr. Zeke Emanuel is with us, Vice Provost of Global Initiatives at University of Pennsylvania. He's joining us via Zoom.
And your questions and comments are coming in. Keep them coming. 888-477-9499, studio2@whyy.org, or comment in the YouTube live stream. Deborah says, once Trump gets his way, we will have no protections from our government, including protection from contaminated or unsafe drugs. That's Deborah's take. Frank from Ballot-Kinwood says, how are these Hims and Hers ads really any different than the way the big drug companies bombard us with ads all the time? They are designed to have people ask for the medications from their physicians. And I guess to answer Frank's question, from what we've heard so far, the difference is the gatekeeper. When you make that request, you're asking your physician, your maybe longtime physician, whether you should take it or not. In this case, you might be going online or to another source to make that same request. But let me get back to the big question, Dr. Zeke Emanuel, as we reintroduce Zeke Emanuel, Vice Provost for Global Initiatives, co-director of the Health Transformation Institute, and professor at Penn. Who should be taking GLP-1s? Let's put aside that conversation about how they're getting them, whether they're compounded or not. I think the big question for the future is who should be taking these?
It's a very big question, and they are miraculous drugs. I think, do they have side effects? Yes. Do we know their full long-term impact if you take them for 5 or 10 years? The answer is no. We haven't been doing studies that long. But so far, they seem to be pretty amazing drugs overall. We know that they reduce heart attacks and heart attack risk. They reduce the risk of some cancers. They also seem to be able to get off their cholesterol and even high blood pressure medications. They may even affect psychological states, cravings, addictions. So they're pretty amazing. Right now, the two groups that are prioritized and should be prioritized are patients who are overweight, have BMIs over 35, 30, are patients who can benefit. It's been tried with patients with BMIs above 27, and that's overweight and obese. And then there are patients who have type 2 diabetes, for which these drugs were initially approved to control diabetes. Now, in the case of diabetes, we know that there are some other drugs that patients can use, SGLT2 drugs, that are very effective and very important. So I think it's mainly the patients who are obese and patients who have type 2 diabetes who should be at the top of the list. A patient who is overweight on a weight loss journey, especially while these drugs are in shortage, I do not think should be prioritized. And for those patients, we really don't know the right way or the impact long-term. You know, there are side effects to these drugs. And one of the big issues evolving is things like loss of muscle mass and those kind of issues. Mm. And we need to take that into account, and we need longer term studies.
Yeah.
On the whole, I'm one of those people who is extremely optimistic that these are going to be very important drugs in treatment. They're not everything. And let's get, why do we have a lot of obesity and diabetes? It's not because our genes have changed and, we've got more obese genes, more genes increasing our risk of diabetes. It's because our food system and the way we have allowed people to consume food and exercise are inclining people to eat more. Ultra-processed foods are not good for us, and they're about 60% of the calories people consume, and those are pumped out to us through advertisements and placement in supermarkets and price. So we have a very bad situation. Just prescribing these very expensive drugs to combat obesity and diabetes without fixing the food system, I think, is not a recipe that's going forward going to be good for the future.
Yeah, but it seems like they do, the GLP-1s have more good, they bring more good than bad. And so my question for you, Zeke Emanuel, is this: should we try to produce more and open up accessibility? Or should there simply be more regulation of these compounded pharmacies so that people can feel like they're getting a safe alternative to what's available?
I don't think that's an either or. I do think we need to increase production. And I know that the drug companies when they can't produce to satisfy all the demand, they're losing money. So that it's in their interest. And one of the good things about the market is that is likely to get to a result. Nonetheless, getting factories online through FDA inspection and all of that takes time. And the factories have to be, in some cases they can be bought and repurposed, but in other cases they have to be built from scratch. And I think that it is going to take time, but we have to solve that shortage problem. I totally agree with you. In the interim, we have to make the supply as safe as possible. And again, I think many of the concerns about the Hims and Hers method of distribution, the advertisement that didn't suggest that there were any problems taking the drugs, that they were simply, wonderful. And they are wonderful drugs, don't get me wrong, but they have side effects and they have interactions with other drugs. There's also the fact that patients have to draw it up, and getting the right dosage is important. All of those things are important. And, it's not the top priority of Hims and Hers.
Yeah.
Chicken Parm on YouTube says, still wondering what the long-term effects of all these drugs will be. I'd never be interested. Plus, it seems like once you're on them, you have to stay on them. No thanks. Frank with a similar comment on YouTube. It really makes you wonder how safe and effective these weight loss drugs such as Ozempic are and how long it takes for the results to show and come to fruition. What I heard you say...
Wait. That is not completely true.
Yeah, let me get your response on that.
We do know that in about a year, you get about a 20% weight loss for patients who are obese. So we have an idea what the short-term effects are and what the effects are on weight loss. What we don't have, and I think this is correct, is a sense of the long-term impact on people's health. And we just haven't been able to study it. And that, I think, is important. If you're on these drugs, how much muscle mass do you lose? What are the other implications of this for other physiological conditions? Your heart function, your kidney function, your cancer risk. It may turn out, there's no doubt that they're very beneficial, especially for patients who have obesity and diabetes. But the full range of risks is not fully appreciated. And then also the full range of benefits, we don't fully know.
And so that brings me to the question about the medium term, right? Because we've kind of juxtaposed the long term with the short term. Sounds like in the short term, most people are saying, look, we need to increase supply. There's not enough of it. Lots of people genuinely could use these. In the medium term, I think my question is, like, what's the target? Like, what should we be driving toward? Should we be driving toward, like, who exactly should we be driving toward getting these medications to? Like, let's describe that patient and sort of, like, how far down the spectrum of need should we actually go before we do know the long-term side effects?
Well, I do think patients who are obese, BMI over 30, certainly over 35 and 40, yeah, and patients who have diabetes who've tried other medications first, those are the patients we need to prioritize. Those are the patients that definitely are going to benefit.
But would you go sort of, would you slide it down below that in any way? Like if you're projecting, let's talk about 5 to 10 years out before we get like really long-term longitudinal data about the effects. Do you think in that medium term, you would, you know, slide it below that 35, 30, or some other categories of patients should be in the mix?
Well, we've done the tests on patients with BMIs of 27, but that's probably where you want to hold it. And how much benefit a patient at 27 is going to get is one of the questions. Patients with diabetes, especially younger patients with diabetes and younger patients with obesity, those diseases take many years off a patient's life.
Yeah.
If you're 20 years old and you're obese with a BMI over 40, you're going to lose over 10 years of your life. Those patients, definitely big, substantial benefits over the short term and long term. Yeah. And the further down you go, less obesity, maybe just overweight, the benefits are going to be less because the impact of those diseases on your health are going to be smaller. And, you know, that's why I worry where people are using this for, you know, I want to shed a few pounds to get into that bathing suit. Well, is that really the right solution to that problem?
Yeah.
We don't know, especially if you're going to continue with those drugs, because if you, as you pointed out, Avi, if you stop, the weight comes back.
Right.
Within a year.
Yeah, and I'll just read a couple comments. Michael from South Jersey says, yeah, have access to free weight loss. It's called working out. Sometimes, Mike, it's a little bit harder than that. Mary says,
it's an oversimplification.
Yeah, but Mary says, I use Ozempic for diabetic neuropathy. Sometimes it's not available because people want it for weight loss. She adds, I would like for people to get help with weight loss, but diabetes must come first. And Nick asks, are drugs from a compounding pharmacy eligible for insurance coverage? In my experience, the one prescription I have from a local doctor was not covered by Blue Cross and was very expensive, not cheaper. Is this typical? And so I want to ask you that question about finances, because a big part of the problem is not just, you know, it being harder to get because of the demand, but also because it's so expensive. So some people may opt for the compounded version just because they can afford it. Is there any efforts to sort of make it more affordable so that the people who do fall, who are above 27 on the BMI, can actually get access to it?
Well, I think that's actually the big issue. And that's why I think there's a lot of attraction to Hims and Hers, is the price, that $150, $165, whatever they're selling it at, that's a lot cheaper than $1,000. Insurance companies are putting up a lot of barriers because they're looking at tens of millions of people on these drugs, and they're not going to rally to, oh, we're going to allow you to get a compounding pharmacy unless they think the prescription is legitimate and that patient can't get the approved from Novo Nordisk or Lilly drugs. But I think the solution has to be to bring the price down. Mm-hmm. And I have suggested that, you know, we need to think of a different model. We need to think of a subscription model, kind of like a Netflix model, where we, you know, for a set price, Lilly and Novo Nordisk would give us as much drug as we can use. And I think that's going to be a better long-term approach. Now, whether we get there, once we get over the shortages, I think is a real question.
What would prevent us from getting there? What would be the hurdles, real quick?
Both the insurance industry and the drug company need to come to an agreement on that. And
that's a big hurdle.
We've tried it for the hepatitis C. We've tried these prescription models for subscription models for the hepatitis C drugs. And that, I think, is, where we probably need to go in this kind of case.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. That was Dr. Zeke Emanuel, who is the Vice Provost of Global Initiatives at Penn, co-directs the university's Health Transformation Institute, one of the architects of Obamacare. And we always appreciate your time on Studio 2, Dr. Emanuel.
It's great to be here with you. You always ask great questions.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Can I just read one more comment, Cherry? Jenna says, if these drugs are so revolutionary and we know how strapped our health system is, could these drugs solve the problems of a healthcare system with backups and fewer sick people? And I think for the boosters of these drugs,
that's what they say.
This
yes.
is their argument.
Yes.
That, you know, the ounce of prevention is worth the pound of cure.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have a lot of conversations about GLP-1s, how they change the economy as we continue and they become more popular. By the way, I want to say thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Besser, and Andreas Coast. Thanks so much to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, Al Banks, and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Hopefully I'll talk better to you tomorrow.